Well, welcome or welcome back to listening to the sound of the genuine. Session two is entitled Ask Me Whether What I Have Done Is My Life. And just so folks in the room know, and we can remember whether we've seen you at the dining hall or somewhere else, who came to the first session yesterday? Okay, and yay, who's new this time around? Well, about half and half. Perfect. Welcome back or welcome. We're going to review some of what we did last time, and we learned some practices that we'll be continuing through all three sessions. We covered them in depth yesterday, and we'll just be practicing them today. So you'll be caught up to speed pretty quickly. I'm Eric Samuelson, and my colleague Anne Marie Russell. These practices came out of our work at Trinity Lutheran College in Everett, Washington, that was formerly the Lutheran Bible Institute. And we did a lot of this work with first-year college students and then found that it sort of infected and the whole community. And so these are simple story practices drawn from the Christian tradition that invite us deeper into our own sense of who we are and who God's calling us to be. And they're powerful, and they can be dangerous. So welcome, and hang on to your hats. So the title of the session is Sound of the Genuine, that comes from a baccalaureate speech that Dr. Howard Thurman gave. And so we're going to start today by reading, we did the whole thing yesterday, we're going to start with the first three sections. So if you turn to page one in your packets, we need three volunteer readers to read those into the space. And slowly and creating a space, so read them slow and deliberately. Can I get three volunteers to read? One, two, three. Perfect, thank you. But go right ahead.
There is in every person something that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in herself or himself. There is in you something that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in yourself. Nobody like you has ever been born, and no one like you will ever be born again. You are the only one.
If you cannot hear the sound of the genuine within you, you will never find whatever it is for which you are searching. And if you hear it and then do not follow it, it was better that you had never been born.
You are the only you that has ever lived. Your idiom is the only idiom of its kind in all the existences. And if you cannot hear the sound of the genuine in you, you will all of your life spend your days on the ends of strings that somebody else pulls.
Thank you. So our session today is going to take a little bit of an inward focus with some time for reflection and some questions and some thinking. There'll be a little bit of time to kind of go off to do a little bit of writing if you like, or you can stay in this space and some sharing. And so this is, of the three sessions, kind of the most reflective, thoughtful, self-examining time. But before we sort of jump into that, we wanted to practice one of the practices that we did yesterday called Holy Listening and Testimony. So if you were here, you'll remember this. And if not, I'll just give you a quick overview. This practice happens between two people. And one person acts as the holy listener, while the other person shares something, just a story. And the listener simply listens, and the person who's sharing just simply shares. And then there's a switch in roles that happens, and so that practice, then the person who was listening talks, and the talker listens. And we added in the second half of our session yesterday one additional practice, which we call self-awakening questions, where the person who listens while the other person talks, and then they have a chance to ask one question about what the person has said, and there's a little bit of back and forth that happens. So, what is our screen? Okay, so that was quick. I'll kind of explain it as we go, but why don't you find a partner that you could share with? So someone that you didn't come with, preferably, or someone you don't know super well, and you're just gonna sit side by side next to them, and then we'll walk you through this practice. No, well, let's just let them go. Yep. So sit next to someone and just introduce yourself by name so you know who you're talking to. Is there an uneven number, Dad? How are we doing? Do you want to be his partner? Okay, I know. Dad, Eric will be your partner. I will. That's fine. Is it just the arrow key that starts it? Okay. All right, so if you look up on our screen, you'll see the question or the prompt for today. It's meant to be sort of open-ended. So here's what it says. Tell a story about a time when you felt deeply connected in community. Tell a story about a time when you felt deeply connected in community. So we're going to take the first 2 minutes just in silence for each person in the pair to think about what story they're going to share. And then there'll be 2 minutes of sharing and then a time for the question, and then we'll swap, okay? So that's my kid upstairs. He has autism. His dad is here to watch, so they may leave, but don't worry about it. Okay. All right, so 2 minutes of thinking time. All right, you got about 10 more seconds. Person who's talking. Okay, now the listener has the opportunity to ask a question of the speaker, something that helps them kind of open up their story or think more deeply about what they've just shared. So you've got a minute to ask a question and hear the response. Sorry to cut you off. It's time to switch roles. So now the person who was sharing is the holy listener. And the other person is responding to the prompt. Tell a story about a time when you felt deeply connected in community. Okay? So go ahead.
So the practice of story, as we said yesterday, is it's a deep and old and we think is a core Christian practice. The sharing of stories, the story of Scripture, and the story of our lives. And it's something that we've sort of lost and lost touch with. So when we do this work, we practice this over and over and over again. There's lots of different prompts, lots of different questions. But when you can open up that story, and we talked about that space of holy listening, that you're inviting and creating a space where someone's soul can come into a state of disclosure and discovery. So thank you for participating in that. What we're going to focus on in the next little bit is thinking about some of the deeper levels of our story and the things that are core to us and what it is that we believe. And we talked yesterday with the holy listening and the testimony that it's not only the big stories in our lives that matter, but those little ones and this quote of being tucked into the seams of everyday life. And so what is it that we believe and what is it that shapes our worldview, shapes our thought pattern, and what is it that gives the container to our lives? Some of that is inherited. Some of that we've collected along the way. Some of that, these messages come from all kinds of different places. So we're going to start with thinking around what is it that we believe, and how does that shape who we are and how we are in the world?
So we want to share a song with you that is written by one of my favorite songwriters. Her name is Carrie Newcomer. And she's Quaker, and so she's a person of faith. But one of the things that I love very much about the Quaker tradition is the way that holiness is found not only in the big, large, traditional kind of church service moments, but in the little, tiny, ordinary moments of life and day. And I think when I think back to like my confirmation class in seventh grade, you know, I can, and then learn to recite all these creeds that we say in church. And so as a church body, we're good about sort of affirming the things that we believe. But I think individually, it's more than just these theological things. And for some of us, those hold more importance. And for some of us, those hold less importance. But there's all kinds of things that we believe in, right? And that we think are valuable and that kind of make their way into that holy space of the common moments of our lives. So we're going to share this song with you. And this is a practice, a writing practice I always did with students. And I actually still do a version of this when I teach creative writing to my high schoolers. So we're kind of modeling one sample of what this might look like, and then we're going to ask you to take some time to write and think about the things that you believe. And you're invited to think about theological things. You're also just invited to think about the ordinary small moment kind of things that you believe make up who you are and the truth of the world you live in. So This is I Believe by Carrie Newcomer. I believe there are some debts we can never repay. And I believe there are some words that you can never unsay. And I don't know a single soul that didn't get lost along the way. And I believe in socks and gloves knit out of soft gray wool. And that there's a place in heaven for those who teach in public school. And I know that I get some things right, but mostly I'm a fool. I believe in a good strong cup of ginger tea, and that all these shoots and roots will become a tree. All I know is I can't help but see all of this as so very holy.
Holy.
And I believe in jars of jelly put up by careful hands. And I believe the most folks are doing about the best they can. And I know that there are some things that I'll never understand. I believe there's healing in the sound of your voice. And that a summer tomato is a cause to rejoice. And that following a song was never really a choice. Never really. Ooh. Never really. Ooh. I believe in a good long letter written on real paper and with real pen. I believe in the ones that I love and I know I will one day see again. I believe in the kindness of strangers and the comfort of old friends. And when I close my eyes to sleep at night, it's good to say amen.
Amen.
I believe that life's comprised of smiles and sniffles and tears. And in an old coat that still has another good year. And I know we all get scared sometimes, but all we need is here.
Oh, I believe.
I believe
in a good strong cup of ginger tea.
And that
all these shoots and roots will become a tree.
All I know is I can't help but see
all of this as
so very holy.
Holy.
Oh, and I believe.
Holy.
So your invitation with that song is to find a quiet place for 10 minutes. We'll come back at 4:05 and just do some journaling and writing about how you would respond to that. What do you believe?
There's a spot in your packet on page... What page is on?
Eight.
Page 8 on to 9. Well, the practice yesterday and that we practiced at the beginning today was holy listening alongside of testimony. And we talked at the end about the shortness of the 2 minutes. And this is what a longer practice looks like. This is testimony, speaking the truths of your lives out loud to other people and receiving those. So we that was a holy listening testimony exercise, and there's lots of that. Another one that we found really powerful with college students in particular, and that, I mean, you may want to just try this at some point, is some of this work comes out of Parker Palmer's Let Your Life Speak, and what we're reading that, and we'd invite them to tell a story of their life that was somebody else's version of their life. Either what their parents expected of them or what society expected of them or something, and to write just in a page or two, what does your life look like if somebody else is in charge? And so they'd write this out, and then we'd reflect on, is that your life? And is that the story that you want to write into the future? Here's what you've received, but is that your story or is that somebody else's story? And then what's God's story in the midst of that, and how does that fit in? In The Sound of the Genuine, we talked about if you don't find the sound of the genuine, you spend your lives on the ends of strings that somebody else pulls. And that's the danger when we're not in touch with our own stories and with our stories together. And there's so many voices coming at us from so many different directions. So we bring into awareness these stories, both the stories that we've received and then the story that we tell ourselves about what we believe and who we are and what shapes us. And we're going to take it kind of another level deeper now, now that we've sort of brought all this stuff up onto the table. And I'm going to read a quote from Thomas Merton in his New Seeds of Contemplation. Every one of us is shadowed by an illusory person, a false self. This is who I want myself to be, but who cannot exist, because God does not know anything about them. And to be unknown of God is altogether too much privacy. My false and private self is the one that wants to exist outside of the reach of God's will and God's love, outside of the reality and outside of life. And such a self cannot help but be an illusion. This is who I want to be, but God does not know anything about that person. It's the false self that we put forward to the world. Sometimes it's a really great self, or sometimes it's a very small self. And God knows what's underneath. And this is a really great contribution, I think, by Thomas Merton. So we're going to talk a little bit about false self and true self, and that story that we want to tell ourselves and that we present to the world. And part of our practice as we do this is to model the story sharing, and when we do this work, we've done this work with college students to kind of open up a space. So we thought we'd invite you a little bit into our cover stories that we tell, and that's how we're calling it today, what our cover stories are. So we talked yesterday about the tapes that play in your head, and I was lucky enough not to have too many tapes from my parents, who are also sitting in the room, which I'm very aware of. Not too many negative tapes, but I realized at some point in my life, I made a decision to be pretty independent and to not need other people and not need things, to be strong and kind of self-reliant, and I'm good at things like school and academics, and I'm big and strong, and as a straight white cisgendered middle class, overly educated male in our society, that cover story really holds. That you can really keep that one going for a long time, to really be independent and not need other people. So that's a story I've carried. And 2 years ago, you know, and at various times it broke down, but I was able to overcome it. And then 2 years ago, it started with a student at the college where I was serving committing suicide, which was really hard on the community and hard on us. And then all those things started to break down. And we had deaths in our family, and the college we found out would be closing at the end of the semester. And people started moving away from where we were living. And my daughter, my eldest child, ended up with a life-threatening illness in the hospital. And it just, all of it broke down. And that cover story just couldn't hold anymore. And Richard Rohr says there's two ways to get closer to the heart of God. One is suffering and the other is prayer. And that really drove me to my knees. So that cover story of strong and independent just kind of, it just fell apart. And it turned out there was something underneath that was truer and closer to who it was that I think is who God sees me as. And that false self, Luther says, the old Adam is drowned in baptism, but he's a really good swimmer. And that false self keeps coming back up. But the awareness of it, and once you know it's false, you can deny it, but it gets harder and harder to do. So that's part of my story, of the cover story, that for me it's being a strong, independent person that doesn't need other people.
And I have found throughout the course of my life that there have been different seasons where different cover stories have lived or existed. As a younger person, I always felt like I was too loud and too masculine and too something, too not quiet and small enough. I remember feeling that very deeply and sort of learning to live into the gifts of strength and loud voice and lots of energy was something that I had to learn. I, like Eric, am a first child, and so I have put upon myself a lot of pressure to succeed, to find perfection, to do all of these things. And interestingly enough, because we didn't really talk about what we were going to share, that season for me, again, in my sort of late 30s into my 40s of a college closing coincided with the adoption of my son Matthew, who came home from China with a cleft lip and palate as his special need and is profoundly autistic and very dysregulated and disordered. And his autism diagnosis came right around the time that the college was failing. And I felt like everything in my life was breaking down. And so the person that I was, this sort of strong, competent, that can hold it all together person, I had no job. I had a child who I felt very unable to parent and care for, and felt very lost in that. And so learning to sort of go really deeply, learning to open my hands and say, I don't know, I can't do it. This is not, I don't think I have what I need to do this, was scary, but was a very helpful thing to admit. So I'm not strong, but I know how to access resources and I know how to get help and I know where to go to surround myself with strength and support. And so that's a new story that I've written. But I think I spent a lot of time hiding under that cover story. I when life was at its worst, I remember a conversation with a colleague at the college who came into my office and said, "How are you doing, Anne-Marie?" And I started to cry. And I said, "I'm not doing well, Mark. I'm not doing well at all." And he gave me a hug and he said, "Oh, I had no idea. You look like you're doing great. All your pictures on Facebook of your family look so happy, right? And you're just doing all this good work." And so I think part for me of learning what my cover story was realizing that nobody else was putting that on myself, but I was putting that up, and that people around me didn't need that story to love me, that they wanted to love me and know me. And that friend, once he knew, was super lovely and attentive and supportive in a way he hadn't been. But when you're a type A first child who wants to look like they're doing it all, it's hard to open those cracks up and say, "I'm drowning and I can't do this," and it's okay to say that. And ironically, I'm almost done, but ironically, one thing I found is that when I learned to open up my cracks, people would open their cracks to me. That putting away that cover story, that vulnerability with someone else, gave them permission to be vulnerable too. And so we could all sort of live in that space of being real and authentic in a way that was really beautiful and felt much more true than pretending like everything was okay. So, so there you go. Blah, we just sort of threw up on you. We want you to think through this for you, for your story. I said to Eric that, again, it's such a neat experience teaching at Holden this week, and it's such a different experience than the work we've done mostly, which has been with like 18, 19-year-olds, because you all have a lot of life behind you in a wonderful way, right? You all maybe have gone through some of these things already. So in your writing, here's what we want you to do. I want you to think about who is your false self? Who is that false self that wants to come out? Or who was that false self? Because maybe you've lived through this process already and you've kind of had a chance to put that cover story aside, or you're working to do that. What are the pressures in your head, in your life, that sort of make you feel like you need to be someone different than you are? And so the prompt in your book on page 10 says, start by writing, without any judgment or critique of yourself, as many aspects of your false and private self as you can. So just start, again, a kind of a free writing process. So who is your false self? How do you hide who you truly are with the self you present to the world? What's your false version of your life? Why does it matter? And then once you've finished, go back and reread what you've written and see if you can condense your reflection into a one-sentence cover story, right? So what's that sort of one sentence that would encapsulate who that false self looks like to other people? Because what we want to do then is sort of name those, like claim those and name those, so that we can kind of let them go and move into a space where we're really open to our authentic selves. So if that cover story, again, is someone that you have been, that has been your cover story for a lot of your life, and maybe you've moved into a space where you're living more authentically, that's okay too. Does that make sense? So, Eric, we're going to go for, what did we say, about 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Again, 10, 15 minutes. So we'll gather back together again. What do you think? At like 4:35? At 4:40. Okay. So again, if you want to find a different space to write and reflect, or you can stand here. And this is your last journal writing activity of the day. So thanks for hanging in there with us for that too. So take some time.
If you're willing, we're going to speak these cover stories into the room. That takes courage. Maybe the first time you've said some of these things out loud, or maybe you've been on to yourself for a while, and sort of wherever you're at is okay. But there's something powerful, as we've been saying, about speaking your truth into the space. And so if you're willing, we'll share the cover stories. Don't feel like you have to, but we'll kind of go around the room, give everybody an opportunity. Feel free to pass. That's totally okay. But I want to make sure that there's space in this room to claim your cover story, and then we'll work with that afterwards. So my cover story is that I'm a strong and self-reliant human being who doesn't need anybody.
Woman who has it all together all the time.
I'm a competent, responsible, independent caregiver who doesn't need much caregiving.
There's sort of a theme here coming along. We should be friends, right? Here.
I think of the water birds swimming serenely over the surface of the water. An awful lot of activity going on under the water.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you.
My cover story is starting to shake a little bit, which is a good thing. And this may be where some of your voices in your head come.
We'll do some family therapy afterwards.
Yeah. I had it together. Strong, resilient, competent. And then I layered that on top of that, the role of a pastor's wife, mm-hmm. of what my own expectations were and what I thought others expected of me.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just following Sue, because mine is strong, confident, independent woman who needs no one.
That's interesting. That's my wife.
Since you're married.
I don't need any help because I am strong, smart, and
kind of self-reliant person.
Uh-huh. Wow. I did not expect this.
This is
That's
actually
pretty cool. Yeah, good.
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah. That because much was given to me, much was expected, and no matter what I do, it's never enough.
Huh. Oh.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
You
got that one, too. Yeah, Barbara.
Presenting a solid, confident self and I can do whatever is needed mantra took way too much energy. I've learned that life is a journey and a script for a good life is not helpful.
That's great.
Right. I'm pretty brief.
I appear confident and in control and have the role by the tail.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yep.
I think the main term here is confident. Looking confident, do a job well done, and smile right through it.
Mm-hmm. I don't need any help. I can take care of myself.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? We need the psychologist left to analyze all of this. Let's jump to the back, and we'll do the back row, and then the front row, strangely, can be last. Okay, so let's go back here.
I have to preface my little story. I just got here, and Anne Marie asked me to bring the medicine up for her son, Tobu. And so I had her back, you know, from the first contact that I had. And so I started out on my way to Wenatchee, and I was pretty far along.
Oh, Mark.
And I got another one from her that said, thank you so much for bringing my son's medicine. So here I am, you know, a bunch of miles away from home, and I get this, and I pulled off into a Safeway parking lot. And the first thought that came to my mind is, what are people going to think of me if I don't bring her? And then after that thought, not too long after, but after that thought, I thought, oh, poor little man. He's probably in misery. And so, you know, my bitter self came back. But the false self is that I'm a person who tries to come off as super responsible, loving, and helpful. But sometimes there's a selfish motive.
Thank you.
I would just say, you know, to almost what everybody else. The person that said they don't need any meals, the only time I need a meal when my mom gets, he needs fixing or I want some mechanical stuff, and then he's like, oh, where's my husband now?
Okay, so we'll zoom back row back here in the pink. You gonna pass? Black shirt.
I'm a little country boy who knows how to dodge the rocks and the ditches.
Okay.
Nice.
Thank you.
I like you.
Yeah, we'll go here. We'll just. I should have started in the front row, but you know, it didn't happen.
So I kept this one up for many, many years. This is a long time ago, but I was a climber, an adventurer, an explorer, a mountaineer, and a world traveler. And underneath, I was actually really lonely, looking for a home, happiness, love, and companionship.
Huh. Interesting.
But it was. My cover story or ended up being kind of an observation about my relationship between my false and true self. So I struggle with it. But what I came up with for now is my false self is an exaggeration and a twisting of my true self, subject to the regard of others.
Mm.
Yeah.
That may be a universal definition of what
That's
that is. I like that.
That's great.
Yeah, I think so. Because there is something true about a false self. Mm-hmm. It's just not like true. Yeah. How about the back?
I can handle anything that comes up, and it creates a barrier between me and people who think I'm perfect.
Okay. Back here.
So I actually struggled with this exercise, I think, because I am really genuine and extremely authentic.
Yes.
So, but I think, I don't know what your name is in the braids there.
Heather.
That's the closest to what I could relate to. My false self is probably an exaggerated version of what I do and believe about myself.
And thanks.
See myself.
And thanks, Sarah, for being willing to say you struggled with that, because when we do some of these things, they fit for some people and not for others. So thank you for your honesty. Yeah. Yeah, appreciate
go
that.
Back to the front row, Bruce.
You
we didn't
we forget.
Forget. We didn't forget.
I was going to be the first one to choose not to.
Okay.
I actually rewrote mine a little bit and I did get a work. Wanting to be liked, almost doing anything in order to be liked, or wanting to please people around.
Yeah.
Well, my cover story is that I'm a strong firstborn overachiever who always excelled in academics, and so I followed a teaching professor profession and became a professor and even an academic dean. I've always had lots of energy, even in old age, which I currently am. I have a lot of energy. And so I became, and still really am, a workaholic. To do all the things that I thought needed to be done in that life. So that's my cover story.
Okay. Thank you.
My false self is creating an appearance of being intelligent. And he's laughing. And this mask that I have is disintegrated.
Say it again. It's
disintegrated. This.
Disintegrated.
It's falling apart.
Yeah. What I heard was disintegrated, which is right, and that's what that word means. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I found this rather confusing. I need to think more about what is and what isn't. Huh. Will I ever truly know?
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
I have had so many identities come and go in my life that I've done really deep work around who I am. And so my one-liner is, what you see is what you get.
That's good. Did anybody that passed want to go again? Give you the chance. No. Thank you. Thank you for being willing to do that. Some of this work, it changes throughout your life, right? And as Anne-Marie said, like you at phases of your life, you have more access to some of this. We got to experience it early because stuff fell apart like really crazy in our lives, and that happens for some people. Rohr and others talk about the two halves of life, and the false self is the self you need to get established in your life. So it's not a bad self. It's the self you need to start out, and it's the self that helps you find an identity and be who you are in the world. But at some point, it breaks down. Sometimes around middle age or later. But at the very least, the sort of the moment you draw your last breath, that false self goes away, right? And so the invitation with some of this work is to say, you can claim that earlier. And when you have access to it, you can decide what story you're going to write now. And now you know your false self, so sorry, you've got some insight. It's hard to stuff that back in the box. But that's the invitation then, is to reflect on that and to kind of wonder, is that who I am and who I'm being called to be?
So have we differed greatly from your college kids that you've worked with?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Because I think when you're 18 years old and you've gone off to college, or 19 or 20 or however old they were, you're living with so many expectations from your parents and your community. So that was way more present with them. Get a good job, be successful, be a great athlete. These are the kinds. I had to be perfect or the best at this or that. That's my response.
Yeah, and I think one of the neat things about the community we were in, it was small and a little bit Holden-y. There's some common DNA in the two places, but the wisdom of the elders who had been through that was life to these young people. And some of them had been through some pretty gnarly stuff. I mean, these kids were pretty resilient, and gritty was a word we often use. Like they'd seen some stuff, a lot of these kids, but to have the wisdom of those who have been on this journey was really crucial to them at really key parts of their lives. So part of the story sharing and part of the value we found, we as the facilitators and kind of the elders in these groups, we got more out of it than they did because we were clear about our own story and we had to sort of sort through it before we invited them into doing it. And so we got to be better elders, I think, by being in this kind of space. And so, part of the reason we wanted to do this here and the way this work is unfolding is to think about how do we bridge these gaps, right? Between the young that are just starting these experiences and are building their false selves and to know that there's more. that this is the work they're going to do now, and there's more to come, and that people have been on this journey before. They're not the first, and that there's life and vibrancy and pain and suffering, and that all that comes together.
When I guess I just want to say, too, that I mean, we're facilitating this, but I don't feel like the expert on this. And I'm obviously like almost 43 and still doing this work. And like hearing your cover stories made me really teary because I feel like I'm in good company, right? And like people in life who've lived a lot more than me and have more life wisdom are still working out these pieces too. So, I mean, I'm really grateful for your, I thought, oh my gosh, people are going to come and be like, we're not saying anything to these two young, you know, young people who think they know what they're talking about. So thank you. It's really honoring to have you be willing to share so, like, vulnerably this stuff. So anyway, more hands. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I gave you my cover story.
Yeah.
I did not give you the other side of it.
Right, sure.
Because I think each of us in life, there are horrible things that happen yeah. to us that make us see what we really are
yeah.
inside and probably the way God sees us.
Yeah.
And because of that, I mean, it's good because we are actually become quite broken by those experiences and know just how not strong we are and how weak we actually are and how the gift that God gives us to be able to move forward in something. And so I think that's really important, you know, through the various cycles of life.
One of the things we did learn from the college students, you know, was diverse experience and diverse race, economic, religious background, that once they got to that place of brokenness and pain, they found they had way more in common. And once they could sort of all admit that they were all struggling and also, and it's like totally different stuff, but there was something about that commonality of human pain and that, and these deep stories that when you cut through we did a mask exercise, it was really kind of awesome. And once they sort of realized they could take that down for a minute in the kind of space that was created, they just all got together.
Well, it makes me think about community and how difficult it is to have community when we're all competent, capable, strong, resilient, all those words, because we're holding ourselves up and we're not actually opening ourselves up to say, man, I've been through the dirt. Can I give you a hand? And, you know, can I listen? The holy listening kind of stuff. That we're even open to hear it or share it. So that was really helpful to me to hear how everybody in this room is capable and competent.
Bruce?
I guess I would just reflect that I'm a little, the term false self, I guess, doesn't ring true because it's integrated with who we are. And so even though there's aspects of it that we misapply or we use as a means of containing problems or it seems to me that there's within the whole it does include those things, that there's an integration of these as to who we are and who we have become and who we are now, and that there's the life, there's the process, it's the sense of the journey to me that includes that. And so I guess that I don't necessarily see it so much as a false self as I see it as a part of who I am and how I have become who I am now.
Yeah, and that's the work, right? It's to sort of, you know, transcend it and then include the things that are valuable out of it, right? And the other way this is talked about are the images is a shadow, and it's sort of integrating your shadow. And there's real power in that. And so it's not something to be denied or avoided, but to be brought in, because we're looking for wholeness, right? And healing in the midst of that. And the other thing with that is brighter lights cast deeper shadows, right? I mean, the brighter the light is, the deeper the shadow is going to be. So sometimes the people who have it the most, or seem to have it the most together, there's actually quite a bit going on behind. And once you sort of realize that, and again, you have access to it, and you can start to choose what you do with that. And
It's like what stress does often in our life, where the stress is terrible. It tears us down, our bodies don't like it,
but it's also something that helps us focus and helps us to accomplish things that otherwise we might not.
Yeah, nobody gets a PhD or gets elected to a high office or achieves anything without a false self that's working real hard, right? Because you got to really, you got to push that. And so, yeah, it is. It's that drive that gets you somewhere.
I am up in years, and when I was working, the resume was the impression I wanted to create so that I would get the job and be well liked and all the rest of the stuff. I don't need a resume anymore. Mm. I'm happy with who I am.
Yeah, thanks.
That's the goal. We should listen more to you. Yeah. Thank you.
I'll go to the music. Yeah, I wanted to share one more song with you, if that's okay. And this is a song that I wrote kind of in the process of thinking about some of these things. Thinking about when I'm no longer in the world, what I've left in my wake, kind of. And I think that is sometimes an important and helpful kind of clarifying thing. And for me, this song wasn't about singing a song about who I was, but sort of who I might become or be, or who I'm working towards being. So this is called When I'm Gone. What will I leave when I'm gone from this world? What legacy will I leave behind? Will I be someone who's known for the way that she never mourned the passing of time? Will courage have been my companion even when I looked fear in the eye? Will hope be the compass that leads me, and truth be the nearest of guides? Well, I hope you see more than a pretty face smiling back from that old photograph. I hope you see courage, conviction, and faith. A woman who knew how to laugh, who dug deep with all that she had. Sorry. Does anyone know just how deeply I grieve for the loss and the pain that I see? Will I be remembered as one of those souls who fight so that all can be free? Does it matter at all what I've done when the leaving is beckoning me? Can I choose what is left in my wake when I cross into that great mystery? Well, I hope you see more than a pretty face smiling back from that old photograph. I hope you see courage, conviction, and faith. A woman who knew how to laugh, who dug deep with all that she had. Well, I hope you see more than a pretty face smiling back from that old photograph. I hope you see courage, conviction, and faith. A woman who knew how to laugh. Oh, and who dug deep with all that she had?
Do another round of holy listening and testimony to kind of make the turn now from what was our false self to what's our authentic self? What is the truer self that we have? So the question this time will be a story about a time when you felt like your most authentic self. So I invite you to find a partner, maybe somebody you haven't talked to already, and we'll do another round. So find a partner. Who doesn't have a partner yet? Raise your hand if you would. We've gained and lost some folks. So. Okay, everybody got a pair? What? Do you have a partner, Deb? Okay, oh. Okay. Well, they can do it then. All right, so 2 minutes of silence with the practice about a time when you felt like your most authentic self. So 2 minutes of silence, ready, go.
All right, thank you for engaging yet again in that. We're just down to, you know, a little bit of time together today. And Eric mentioned the book Let Your Life Speak by Parker Palmer, which if you haven't read it, I would highly recommend it to you. Parker Palmer is a writer. He's also Quaker and is a really thoughtful, spiritual, wise human being who wrote a really honest book about kind of this process of realizing that the path he was on wasn't the path that he felt deeply called to and that it was authentic to himself. But I wanted to just switch over and leave you with a poem. And this poem comes out of this book, but it's actually not where I first intersected it. I taught high school in Oregon, and William Stafford is a well-known Oregon poet. And I discovered this book or this poem first in a compilation of Oregon poetry that I would teach to my students in class. And have loved it. This has found its way to my office door. It's on my classroom door right now for my juniors and seniors as they leave every day to look at. And a copy of this poem is in your packet. Did you find it? It's on page 11. And so this, you know, I get to come alive as your poetry professor because this is my thing that I love. So what I want to do is I just want us to read this aloud together, and I'm going to ask two voices to read it, because when we read poetry, we want to hear it in more than one voice, right? Because we hear it differently when different people read it. And the first time we go through it, I want you to take your pen or pencil, and I want you to just mark anything that jumps out at you that maybe resonates with you in terms of what we've been talking about today, or that you just think is lovely, or that you don't understand or doesn't feel right, like however you want to respond to it, but just kind of mark and notate. And then the second time aloud, kind of just think about the poem as a whole and what it's saying. And I just want to get your reflection on this, okay? So let's see, who would like to read the first time, our first voice? Yes, and then our second. Can I get a woman just to have a different voice? I love you, Deb. I love your reading voice, actually. Tawny, okay, so two voices.
Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden. And there are comings and goings from miles away that hold the stillness exactly before us. What the river says, that is what I say.
Okay. Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden, and there are comings and goings from miles away that hold the stillness exactly before us. What the river says, that is what I say.
Thank you. So what are the lines that emerge for you, or the words, or the turn of the phrase that really, that might speak to you from this poem? Yeah.
I think just the last one, what the river says, that is what I say.
Yeah.
That held the most.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah?
Most of the last on the line, ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Myron.
The words, the river is ice, that sort of speaks to experience, end of life, later on, maturity. Mm-hmm. Is that when you can get the answers to these questions?
Honey?
We know the current is there hidden, like all of those things in life that are trying to suck you in.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
You and I can turn, take the other. It doesn't say it.
Yeah.
You and I can turn and look.
River and wait. Yeah. Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah.
Ask me whether what I have done is my life.
Yeah. That's the title of our session. Did you notice that?
Yeah, that sort of goes back to the last little project.
It does.
The false self.
It does. Yeah. It does. Mark?
Hold the stillness exactly.
Hold the stillness exactly. Yep. Any other words or phrases that jumped out at you? So what do you think? What's because of course poetry speaks differently to different people. What do you hear in this? How does this resonate? Again, somebody made one connection already, but how does this resonate with what we've been talking about today? Sort of weightiness of this poem. What's its tone? I mean, what's its... Yeah. Do you want to say?
I was just going to say, it's to me, and I will say I have trouble with poetry.
Oh, well.
Because... We have a poet in the family whose poetry I have a very difficult time understanding. Because like this, there's very little punctuation.
Yeah.
And punctuation makes a big difference. But this is, to me, to read it, I mean, even hearing it, hearing someone else read it, every time, I mean, I've sort of been sitting here going through it again and again.
Yeah.
And each time, other things pop up.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not patient enough to read poetry 5 or 6, 10 times to see what it's trying to say.
Yep. But I would also say that the good poetry shouldn't confuse us, right? So poetry is meant to be accessible, to be read, and to be understood.
Poetry confuses me.
Yes, I'm sorry.
what the poem does in a remarkable way, I think, is gets you present in a particular place and space, like you're standing before a river, and it holds you right in that place and the significance of that place, and then you're sensing that for your whole life is, I'm at this place. It might be a place in time, or it might be a place in realizing who your authentic self is.
Thanks. Behind you, the gentleman behind you.
I notice in the first section of it, it's very first person. I, me, I. And then at a second section, you'll get a feel of the you and us.
Yeah.
What is there about that first person possessive of
everything? Yeah.
I'm wondering who I'm having this dialogue with. Uh-huh. Who am I speaking to?
Mm-hmm. Maybe the shadow self.
We're speaking to ourselves, aren't we?
Wow.
But I don't have to ask me. I already know.
Oh. Yeah.
I think it's interesting, though, that in the second stanza, I will listen to what you say.
Yeah.
And then together, you and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's very powerful.
Right, there's a communal presence in the second stanza that isn't there in the first stanza, for sure.
Yeah, I think the power for me is the movement of the river as an example or a symbol of life and life moving and all the changes in that story.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is a poem that speaks to me as an older person more than it would have as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least different.
Mm-hmm. Eric?
I've read this poem dozens of times, and I always get a particular... It's very visual to me, and I've kind of had a hunch that it's Railroad Creek in my mind here in the winter, and standing on the bridge in winter, and I've spent way more time here in the winter than in the summer, and that's been a place for me, and then realizing... I stood on the bridge the other day, and it's a different bridge. So they're like reading. This time, I'm reading it. There's the bridge that was there isn't there anymore. Hmm. And so it's just I'm having some neat visual stuff with this approach.
Any other thoughts? Yeah.
I see visually first when the river is ice.
Uh-huh.
So I look at it not as ice flowing, but just.
Right.
Ice.
Right.
And then it says the silent river. Well, it's not moving.
Right.
And then the current is there, but it's hidden.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's underneath the ice.
Right.
There's it's saying something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's saying, but it's saying something.
Yeah.
See, that's kind of the thing that I get confused.
Yeah. But I love that you're like still engaging with it. Like you're still working with it. And none of us in here have the perfect, we could ask, except that William Stafford is no longer alive, but we could have asked him when he was alive what he meant, maybe. Yeah.
But then it's the stillness and then what the river says, and yet it's silent.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a theme there.
Right.
Well, he also says, ask me mistakes.
Yeah.
What I've done well or what my false self is, but what mistakes.
It's gentle, right? There's like I always ask my students what tone comes through in the poem, and it's not accusatory, right? It's communal, it's gentle, it's sort of sitting, it's putting this out there and sitting alongside each other as we ask these questions.
Well, he's asking for feedback,
right? Yep.
But it's cold. We don't want to sit there too long.
You don't want to sit there too long. Right. Yeah, Deb, what were you saying?
I felt a sense of hopefulness.
Did you? Yeah.
I don't even know why it felt so hopeful.
Yeah.
Of the ask me part. You know, that someone cares enough to hear what I have to say.
Yeah.
Who really wants to hear what hurts.
Yeah, that's a good way to end, Eric.
Yeah, I'm going to just sort of set us up for Thursday. We don't have a session tomorrow, but our third session is The Danger of a Single Story. And was anybody in Glenn's session this morning in this room about Ruth? Were you here? Yeah, the spirit is up to something, because like these things are all connecting, at least for me. But he had a slide up. And when he's talking about the book of Ruth and the story of Ruth, he said, in the book of Ruth, the book of Ruth is created by an artist to address the stereotyping and demonizing by telling a story as a counter-narrative. the story of Ruth functioning as this alternative reality, this different story that is told, and the power that art and poems like this and the music has to kind of transform that. And then the next slide, he had this question: what is there in our faith life and practice which will assist us in telling a compelling counter-narrative? And I think that's what we've been up to today, right? It's like to get in touch with that story and those stories as we then start to shape what is the story we want to tell, and how do we live into that, and what difference does it make, not just for ourselves, but for others? And what's the story, and Nadia had this last night, those people in the corners that aren't getting water, what's their story, and are we listening to that story? So the shift for Thursday will be digging into this. It's a TED Talk that Anne-Marie and I just love. It's called The Danger of a Single Story, and the woman's name I always forget.
It's Chimamanda Adichie.
Thank you. And then we'll do some embodied practice and reflection. So it'll be, this was very like inward, and Thursday is very, let's take it outward and see.
But no one's like singing a solo or doing a dance in front of everyone.
No, it's collective.
It's not quite that performative.
Yeah, it'll be collective. Yeah. So
communally moving our bodies.
Hopefully you can come back to that. And let's end with, in your packet, back to page one, we started today with the sound of the genuine, and we'll just finish. So we need readers for, was it 4, 5, and 6? We get volunteers to read that into the space. 3 volunteers.
4. Coda, 5, 6.
So the burden of what I have to say to you is, what is your name? Who are you? And can you find a way to hear the sound of the genuine in yourself?
There are so many voices and noises going on inside of you. So many echoes of all sorts. So many internalizing of the rumble and traffic going on in your minds. The confusions, the disorders by which your environment is peopled, that I wonder if you can get still enough. Not quiet enough, but still enough. To hear rumbling up from your unique and essential idiom, the sound of the genuine in you. I don't know if you can, but this is your assignment.
The sound of the genuine is flowing through you. Don't be deceived and thrown off by all the noises that are a part, even of your dreams and your ambitions, that you don't hear the sound of the genuine in you. Because that is the only true guide you will ever have. And if you don't have that, you don't have a thing. Cultivate the discipline of listening to the sound of the genuine in yourself.
Thank you for being still with us for today.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
The rest of your
Thank
afternoon.
You.